Good evening. I was a young man when the Berlin Wall came down. I remember it vividly. It felt as if we were casting off the shackles of history, a continent united by freedom and democracy. If you told me then that in my lifetime we would see Russian tanks rolling into European cities again, I would not have believed you. Yet here we are, in a world where everything has changed. Because 3 years ago in Ukraine, that is exactly what happened. Just reflect on that for a second. I think it's worth it. Just imagine you're walking to work, taking your kids to school. Just another February morning like any other. Then suddenly, missiles, sirens, explosions, not in the distance, not on television, in your town, hitting your community, killing your friends, an invading army in your country. Now, the people of Ukraine have woken up to this nightmare for 3 years now. Their courage is inspiring, and Britain can be proud of its response. British families have opened their doors to fleeing Ukrainians. The yellow and light blue flag flies on church halls and churches, the length and breadth of this country. And I will put on record again that I respect the robust response taken by the previous government. I supported it in opposition, and we have built on it in government, taking our support for Ukraine to record levels. But as the nature of that conflict changes, as it has done in recent weeks, it also brings our response into sharper focus. And I believe we must now change our approach to national security so we are ready to meet the challenges of our volatile world. The reason for this is straightforward. Putin's aggression does not stop in Ukraine. Russian spy ships menace our waters. Russian planes enter our airspace. Russian cyber attacks hit our NHS. And just 7 years ago, there was a Russian chemical weapons attack in broad daylight on the streets of Salisbury. We can't hide from this. And I know people have felt the impact of this conflict through rising bills and prices. But unless Ukraine is properly protected from Putin, then Europe will only become more unstable, and that will hurt us even more. Furthermore, the great lesson of our history is that tyrants like Putin only respond to strength. So today I have announced the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the end of the Cold War. We will keep our manifesto commitment to spend 2.5% of our GDP on defence. But in light of the grave threats that we face, we will bring forward that target so we meet it in 2027. That is an increase of £13.4 billion year on year compared to where we are today. And we will go further. I have long argued that in the face of ongoing and generational challenges, European countries must do more for their own defence. That is incontrovertible, a completely reasonable point. It is a generational challenge, of course it is, but one we must now take on. So subject to economic and fiscal conditions, we will also set out a clear ambition for defence spending to rise to 3% of GDP in the next Parliament. Clearly, this is the first and foremost a security imperative. But I also believe that it's a tremendous opportunity. We can use this investment to rebuild Britain's industrial base. The first test of defence policy is always whether it keeps our country safe. But the second should be whether it improves the condition of the British people. Does it help provide the economic security that working people need? Because ultimately, that is fundamental to national security as well. So mark my words, we will make sure this investment maximises British jobs, British growth, British skills and British innovation. And we should be optimistic about the change that it will deliver. Nonetheless, in the short term, this investment can only be funded through hard choices. And so today I've decided that we will fund the initial increase in defence spending by cutting our spending on overseas development, moving from 0.5% of GNI to 0.3%. I want to be clear, that is not an announcement that I'm happy to make. I'm proud of Britain's pioneering record on overseas development, and we will continue to play a key humanitarian role in war-torn countries like Sudan, Ukraine, and Gaza, in tackling climate change and supporting international efforts on global health challenges like vaccination. And we will do everything to move towards a world where we can rebuild our development capacity. However, the realities of our dangerous new era mean that the defence and national security of our country must always come first. That is what I campaigned on in the general election. It is what we are delivering today. A new approach on defence, a revival of our industrial base, a deepening of our alliances, the instruments of our national power brought together, creating opportunity, assuring our allies, delivering security for our country. At moments like this in our past, Britain has stood up to be counted. It has come together and it has demonstrated strength. And that is what the security of this country needs now. And it is what this government will deliver. I will now take questions from the media. I've got Beth from Sky first.
Refused to give a time frame of when you'd hit spending 2.5% of GDP on defence, and now you've accelerated that. Isn't the simple reality that a Trump White House has now bounced you into that acceleration and that decision? And you say this is a generational moment, you reference the Cold War, you sound like a Prime Minister on war footing. Should viewers be alarmed at how significant this moment is? And what does it really mean for our national security? Thank you.
Well, Beth, this is a significant moment. And that is why we've got to rise this generational challenge. It is a moment where we have to fight for peace through the action that we take. And in relation to your question about the timing, I think in our heart of hearts, we've all known that this decision has been coming for 3 years, since the beginning of the conflict in Ukraine. The last few weeks have accelerated my thinking on when we needed to make this announcement. And I'll be very clear about that, because it is absolutely clear to me now that the decision that, as it were, started life 3 years ago needs to be taken now to rise to the challenge that we have to face. The conflict in Ukraine is about the sovereignty of Ukraine. It's also about security and defence in Europe and our security and defence. And the first duty of government is to ensure that its citizens are secure. And that is why I'm taking that as a matter of duty and responsibility today. Thank you, Beth. Can I go to Carl, ITV?
Thank you, Prime Minister. The Russians have been in Ukraine for 3 years now. What has changed is the response from the White House. You wouldn't be making this announcement today if you weren't going to see Donald Trump on Thursday, would you? And could I also ask, is he the reason why you've decided to take the money for defence from the aid budget?
Well, on the timing, I do think that this is a decision that's 3 years in the making. I do think that we've known that this decision had to be taken. Of course, the discussions about talks between the parties, a possible peace, what that might mean for European security, the role the UK would have to play in that, has brought our response into sharp focus. I have made a commitment for the safety and security of our country that we will play our full part in any security guarantees if we get that far. And that includes a commitment, if necessary, to use capabilities such as putting our boots on the ground, subject to a US backstop. But it is that context, and in that context, that, yes, I have pushed our system to move this date forward, because I think it's vital that we take this decision now, that we rise to the occasion, and we show the leadership that's needed across Europe in response to a very changed context. And that's why I've made this decision today. Thank you. Chris Mason.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Chris Mason, BBC News. Picking up on Carl and Beth's question, what do you say to those people who might think that Donald Trump is now effectively setting UK government policy? And have you done an assessment on the impact of the cutting of the aid budget? Thank you.
I've been arguing for some time in most of the meetings I've been to since I've been Prime Minister for 7 or 8 months now, that European countries, including the United Kingdom, needed to do more for our own collective self-defence and security. So that is not a new argument. Yes, it's true President Trump thinks we should do more, and I agree with him. It chimes with my thinking on this. And by more, I mean more capability, I mean more coordination, and I need more spending. And we have to learn the lessons of the conflict, particularly when it comes to capability and coordination. The war being fought in Ukraine, I felt this very strongly when I was there a few weeks ago, is being fought now in a very different way to the way it was being fought just 3 years ago. We're seeing firsthand what conflict looks like in Europe in 2025. We have to respond to that for the safety and security of our country. So this is very much my decision based on my assessment of the circumstances that we face as a country. And it is taken first and foremost to ensure that the United Kingdom and its citizens are safe and secure. That is the first duty that I have as Prime Minister. It is my duty, my responsibility, and that is why I have taken this decision today. Thank you. Chris Hope. Chris.
Prime Minister, Christopher Hope from GB News. In July, Reform UK fought the election on a policy to increase defence spending to 2.5% of GDP by 2027 and 3% of GDP after 2030, funded by a £6 billion saving in the aid budget. You said you'll do the similar, you'll increase defence spending to 2.5% by 2027, 3% after 2030, funded by a £6 billion cut in the aid budget. Are you Nigel Farage in disguise?
Nigel Farage didn't even turn up to the debate in Parliament today. Nigel Farage is fawning over Putin. That's not patriotism. That is not what working people need. What I've done is take the duty of Prime Minister seriously, which is to ensure that our citizens are safe and secure, and this decision is made to ensure that they are safe and secure. It is a decision intended to ensure that we fight for the peace that we've enjoyed for the last 80 years so that for generations to come, they can enjoy the freedoms that we have enjoyed. So I've taken this with only one thing in mind, and that is the citizens of this country for whom I am responsible. Thank you, Chris. Theo, Times Radio.
Theo Ashwood, Times Radio. Are you concerned, Prime Minister, that come the spending review later in the spring, that you've taken this tough decision when it comes to defence spending, but you're also going to have to take tough decisions when it potentially comes to tax rises, spending cuts across Whitehall, and that your own MPs and your own voters are going to turn to you and say, well, hang on a moment, you can find the money for defence. Why can't you find the money for the things that we're really worried about?
Look, I have taken tough decisions. We took tough decisions in the budget. We took decisions I didn't want to take in terms of national insurance, winter fuel allowance. But we took those tough decisions as a political choice so we could put the money into the NHS and deliver the reduction, for example, that we've seen in waiting lists. And that is a choice. And you can't have both. You can't argue no tax rises, winter fuel changes. But please, can we have the money for the NHS as well? It's one or the other. So we've taken that choice. And we will have to make other choices. I've taken a difficult choice today because I believe in overseas development. And I know the impact of the decision that I've had to take today. And I do not take it lightly. I do not want to take it. But the choice I've taken is that if we are going to ramp up defence spending in the way that I believe we have to, which underpins the decision I've made, then it is important that on the same day that I set out the extra spending, I set out pounds and pence precisely how we're going to fund it. What you saw from the last government going into the election was a plan to increase defence spending by 2030 that was full of holes, that didn't have credibility, that when probed had nothing material there. This is too serious for that kind of politics. This is about a credible plan put forward to ensure the security and defence of our country and of Europe. And that's why I've taken the difficult decision today to do a switch spend from development aid into defence, not a decision that I, as a British Labour Prime Minister, would have wanted to take, but a decision that I must take in order to secure the security and defence of our country. Jason from the Mail.
Thanks, PM. You're off to see Donald Trump in a couple of days. We've had him calling Zelensky a dictator, suggesting he could be cut out of talks about the future of his own country. Can you change his mind about Ukraine? And I think you've had a chat with President Macron this afternoon, as other European leaders coming here on Sunday. To what extent is this now a European effort to kind of lobby the US back into a better position?
I have spoken to President Zelensky a number of times. I spoke to him on Wednesday night as the democratically elected leader in Ukraine. I spoke to him again on Saturday. I have spoken to President Macron this afternoon on his return to France, and I am hosting a number of countries at the weekend for us to continue to discuss how we go forward together as allies in light of the situation that we face. But I come back to something I said earlier today. This is not about a choice between the US or Europe. That would be a historic mistake in my view. This country has always been a key ally of the US and a keen ally with our European partners. And it's important that we continue to do so. The US is our most important alliance on NATO, on our nuclear capabilities, on AUKUS, and so much more that we do together. We fought wars together. We have an incredible amount of trade between us. And that alliance matters to me. It matters to this country. But equally, we have to ensure that we have the right alliances with our European partners so that together, in the way that this country has always done, and drawing together our European partners and the US, we have strength in our special position, the special relationship, which is not just a set of words. It's forged and has been forged over many years and withstood many, many challenges, and is important today as it's ever been in my view. Thank you. I've got Harry from The Sun.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Harry Cole from The Sun. You talk about our most important alliance and the special relationship there. Can I get your reaction then to the scene, the remarkable scenes we saw at the United Nations last night, where the United States, apparently our most important ally, was voting with hostile states like North Korea, Iran, and astonishingly Russia? How did that make you feel as the man who's had to go and sit next to the president on Thursday and say all this stuff to his face?
We voted in the way we voted last night, and so the record of the United Kingdom government is clear in relation to our position on Ukraine. And I have said repeatedly that our support for Ukraine is unwavering. We'll support them for as long as is necessary, because this is about the sovereignty of Ukraine. It's about the freedom and security of Europe and of our own country. I will go to see President Trump. I've already met him in September of last year. I've had a number of conversations with him in order to ensure we can take the relationship between our two countries from strength to strength, to make sure we can meet the challenges of the world as it now is together. And for me, that is far more important than commenting on individual resolutions at the UN, notwithstanding the context that that inevitably creates. So I am going. We have a good relationship, and we have a positive relationship. Our countries have a strong relationship, and I will be going to build that relationship and take it from strength to strength. And that is something that President Trump and I have already discussed on the phone in the various exchanges that I've had with him. And then Lizzie from the Mirror.
Lizzie. Hi, Lizzie Buckham from the Daily Mirror. Aid organisations have reacted with alarm at the decision to cut the overseas aid budget and warned it could leave the world less safe. David Miliband from the International Rescue Committee said that the overseas aid budget can help prevent people from being displaced. Is this likely to hamper your efforts to curb irregular migration by driving more people to flee to UK and Europe, particularly when coupled with the US freezing its own humanitarian assistance?
As I've said, the decision on aid and cutting aid is not a decision I wanted to make. And it is important that I'm clear that we will continue our support in areas such as Gaza, Sudan, Ukraine, of course. And that's the context in which we've made this decision. There's a part of the Overseas Development Fund which is being used to pay the hotel bills for asylum seekers whose cases haven't been processed. We need to change that by processing those claims and bringing those bills down. But nonetheless, this is a cut, and I accept that. But there is no driver of migration and poverty like conflict. And that is why ensuring that by taking strong action now to deter tyrants like Putin, we have to take the decisions we've made today. Not a decision I wanted to take, a decision that's necessary for the protection of our country. And the very people who are most vulnerable are those that would be hit hardest if there was conflict. And that is why today I've taken necessary steps to avoid conflict. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Three years since Russia launched its vile assault on Ukraine, I would like to address the international situation and the implication for Britain's national security. Mr. Speaker, in my first week as Prime Minister, I travelled to the NATO summit in Washington with a simple message: that NATO and our allies could trust this government would fulfil Britain and indeed the Labour Party's historic role to put our collective security first. Yeah. I spoke of my great pride, Mr. Speaker, to lead the party that was a founding member of NATO. The inheritor of the legacy of Clement Attlee and Ernest Bevin, who not only stood behind Winston Churchill in wartime, but won the peace by establishing the great post-war order here and abroad. Mr. Speaker, it's a proud legacy, but in a world like ours, it's also a heavy one, because the historical load we must carry to fulfil our duty is not as light as it once was. We must bend our backs across this House because these times demand a united Britain, and we must deploy all of our resources to achieve security. Mr. Speaker, as a young man, I vividly remember the Berlin Wall coming down. It felt as if we were casting off the shackles of history, a continent united by freedom and democracy. If you had told me then that in my lifetime we would see Russian tanks rolling into European cities again, I would not have believed you. Yet here we are, in a world where everything has changed. Because 3 years ago, that is exactly what happened. Britain can be proud of our response. British families opened their doors to fleeing Ukrainians. The yellow and light blue, fluttering on town halls and churches, the length and breadth of this country. And the party opposite, in government, was robust in our response. I supported that in opposition. I applaud them for it now. And we have built on that, bringing our support for Ukraine to a record level this year. Mr. Speaker, we should not pretend that any of this has been easy. Working people have already felt the cost of Russian actions through rising prices and bills. Nonetheless, one of the great lessons of our history is that instability in Europe will always wash up on our shores, and that tyrants like Putin only respond to strength. Russia is a menace in our waters, in our airspace, and on our streets.
They've launched cyber attacks on our NHS only 7 years ago, a chemical weapons attack on the streets of Salisbury. We must stand by Ukraine, because if we do not achieve a lasting peace, then the economic instability, the threats to our security, they will only grow. And so, as the nature of that conflict changes, as it has in recent weeks, it brings our response into sharper focus. A new era that we must meet, as we have so often in the past, together and with strength. Mr. Speaker, the fundamentals of British strategy are unchanged. I know that the current moment is volatile, but there is still no good reason why they cannot endure. So let me spell out to the House exactly how we will renew them for these times. First, NATO is the bedrock of our security and will remain so. Yeah. It has brought peace for 75 years. It is as important today as the day on which it was founded. Putin thought he would weaken NATO. He's achieved the exact opposite. Yeah. And it remains the organisation receives the vast bulk of our defence effort in every domain, and that must continue. Second, we must reject any false choice between our allies, between one side of the Atlantic or the other. That is against our history, country and party, because it's against our fundamental national interest. The US is our most important bilateral alliance. It straddles everything from nuclear technology to NATO to Five Eyes, AUKUS and beyond. It survived countless external challenges in the past. We fought wars together with the closest partners in trade, growth and security. So this week, when I meet President Trump, I will be clear. I want this relationship to go from strength to strength. Yeah. But, Mr. Speaker, strength in this world also depends on a new alliance with Europe. As I said in Paris last week, our commitment to European defence and security is unwavering, but now is the time to deepen it. So we will find new ways to work together on our collective interests and threats, protecting our borders, bringing our companies together, seeking out new opportunities for growth. Third, Mr. Speaker, we seek peace, not conflict. And we believe in the power of diplomacy to deliver that end. That, of course, is most pressing in Ukraine. Nobody in this House or this country wants the bloodshed to continue. Nobody. And, Mr. Speaker, I've seen the devastation in Ukraine firsthand. What you see in places like Bucha, that never leaves you. But for peace to endure in Ukraine and beyond, we need deterrence. I know that this House will endorse the principle of winning peace through strength. Yeah. So we will continue to stand behind the people of Ukraine. We must ensure they negotiate their future, and we'll continue to put them in the strongest position for a lasting peace. Fourth, Mr. Speaker, we must change our national security posture, because a generational challenge requires a generational response. That will demand some extremely difficult and painful choices. And through those choices, as hard as they are, we must also seek unity, a whole society effort that will reach into the lives, the industries, and the homes of the British people. I started this statement by recalling the era of Attlee and Bevin. And of course, this year we will mark many anniversaries of that greatest generation. We must find courage in our history, courage in who we are as a nation, because courage is what our own era now demands of us. So starting today, I can announce this government will begin the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the end of the Cold War. Yeah. We will deliver our commitment to spend 2.5% of GDP on defence, but we will bring it forward so that we reach that level in 2027. Yeah. Yeah. And we will maintain that for the rest of this Parliament. And let me spell that out, Mr. Speaker. That means spending £13.4 billion more on defence every year from 2027. But, Mr. Speaker, we also face enemies that are sophisticated in cyber attacks, sabotage, even assassination. And so our intelligence and security services are an increasingly vital part of protecting both us and our allies. So on top of the funding of 2.5% that I've just announced, going forward we will recognise the incredible contribution of our intelligence and security services to the defence of the nation, which means taken together we will be spending 2.6% on our defence from 2027. Yeah. But Mr. Speaker, we must go further still. I've long argued that in the face of ongoing generational challenges, all European allies must step up and do more for our own defence. So, subject to economic and fiscal conditions and aligned with our strategic and operational needs, we will also set a clear ambition for defence spending to rise to 3% of GDP in the next Parliament. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I want to be very clear. The nature of warfare has changed significantly. That is clear from the battlefield in Ukraine. And so we must modernise and reform our capabilities as we invest. I equally want to be very clear that, like any other investment we make, we must seek value for money. And that's why we're putting in place a new defence reform and efficiency plan, jointly led by my right honourable friends, the Chancellor and the Defence Secretary. Yeah. This investment means that the UK will strengthen its position as a leader in NATO and in the collective defence of our continent. And we should welcome that role. It is good for our national security. It is also good for the defining mission of this government to restore growth to our economy. And we should be optimistic of what it can deliver in those terms. But, Mr. Speaker, in the short term, it can only be funded through hard choices. And in this case, that means we will cut our spending on development assistance, moving from 0.5% of GNI today to 0.3% in 2027, fully funding our increased investment in defence. I want to be clear to the House, that is not an announcement I am happy to make. I'm proud of our pioneering record on overseas development, and we will continue to play a key humanitarian role in Sudan, in Ukraine and in Gaza, tackling climate change, supporting multinational efforts on global health and challenges like vaccination. In recent years, the development budget was redirected towards asylum backlogs, paying for hotels. So as we're clearing that backlog at a record pace, there are efficiencies that will reduce the need to cut spending on our overseas programmes. But nonetheless, it remains a cut, and I will not pretend otherwise. We will do everything we can to return to a world where that is not the case and rebuild a capability on development. But at times like this, the defence and security of the British people must always come first. That is the number one priority of this government. But, Mr. Speaker, it's not just about spending. Our whole approach to national security must now change. We will have to ask British industry, British universities, British businesses and the British people to play a bigger part. Use this to renew the social contract of our nation, the rights and responsibilities that we owe one another. The first test of our defence policy is, of course, whether it keeps our country safe. But the second should be whether it improves the conditions of the British people. Does it help provide the economic security that working people need? because ultimately, as Attlee and Bevin knew, that is fundamental to national security as well. We will use this investment as an opportunity. We will translate defence spending into British growth, British jobs, British skills, British innovation. We will use the full powers of the Procurement Act to rebuild our industrial base. And, Mr. Speaker, as the Strategic Defence Review is well underway, and across government we're conducting a number of other reviews relevant to national security, it's obvious that these reviews must pull together. So before the NATO summit in June, we will publish a single national security strategy, and we will bring it to this House because, Mr. Speaker, as I said earlier, that is how we must meet the threats of our age, together and with strength. A new approach to defence, a revival of our industrial base, a deepening of our alliances, the instruments of our national power brought together, creating opportunity, assuring our allies, delivering security for our country. Mr. Speaker, at moments like these in our past, Britain has stood up to be counted. It has come together and it has demonstrated strength. That is what the security of our country needs now, and it is what this government will deliver. And I commend this statement to the House.